Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cybersecurity Recruiter podcast. Today, I'm joined by Ashley. How are you doing, Ashley?
Hey, doing good. How are you, Thomas?
Good. I'm good. It's nice having a little chit chat before we hit record there. And it's nice having another fellow recruiter, talent acquisition professional on the show. I think we've probably had four or five guests ever that have been recruiters. So you're in a special exclusive club, Ashley. So there you go.
I feel special. Thank you.
Cool. Look, I'm looking forward to it. I think hearing two people with recruitment expertise and knowledge chatting, I'd argue it's probably been more relevant than ever. There's a lot of people out there that are having a tough time. There's pockets of the market that are still pretty good. But I think on the whole, there's some people out there that are, and it's a really interesting market. So it'll be nice to have a chat. But what I'll do, Ashley, to get started, for the listeners that have never met you before, I'll do a bit of an intro. So for everyone limited, you then moved on to Agilon. You started there as a staffing manager for about 4.5 years. You then progressed on to be a divisional director. Currently, you are a new chartered technologies. You started as a recruitment manager. And about just over a year and a half ago, you again progressed on to director of talent management. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Yeah, cool. Nice to have you on, actually. I know I've done you a bit of an intro, but I'll start where I always start, which is, who are you? What do you get up to? What's kind of life like in your world right now?
Yeah, great question. I have just under 2 decades of recruiting experience, which, gosh, when I say it out loud, makes me feel so dated. But I feel like I've been doing this forever. And I cut my teeth in the agency world. And then in the last couple of years, moved over to the corporate side of the house. And I have to say, I wouldn't change it. I feel like being on the staffing side of the house really helped me perfect the hustle, if you will, the understanding of touching candidates and the different clients and things like that. And now I started out at New Charter Technologies building the entire recruiting function. And now I have an amazing team of 5 recruiters underneath me. And I just feel like we're really rocking it out when it comes to IT recruiting and the IT side.
Cool. I remember we were talking before, I was like loving your management style, because it was very much like with your recruiters, it's like, as long as they're getting the job done, you're just like, yep, crack on.
I'm 100%.
Like, yeah, that sounds cool.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like really a good manager is not a micromanager. We have to trust the people that work for us. I can't imagine sitting around and wondering what my recruiters are doing all day long. I trust them to get the job done. Honestly, I don't care where they are and when they're doing it, as long as they're talking to people and getting positions filled, they're doing a good job.
Yeah, I think so. And I think with what we do, it's really clear. If you're getting results and doing the job properly and the candidate experience is good and you're delivering, that's really clear to see. And if you're doing that on a remote basis, I think people really are appreciative. It's not the norm. The remote jobs have dropped down now. A lot of the agencies and bigger firms are getting people on site. So I think if you give people that freedom, it gives you a chance to get people that are, as you've described, self-sufficient, want to crack on, want to move things forward. So yeah, nicer for you and nicer for them as well.
Exactly.
So Ashley, so tough market out there at the minute. There'll be a lot of people listening that have been on the market for a while, trying to move forward, trying to progress, trying to find a new role. What sorts of things are you looking for? What's your ideal profile? Any kind of do's and don'ts for folks out there listening that are having a rocky time at the minute?
Yeah, this is an interesting question, because the ideal profile could be a number of different things. And so when I think about that question, I'm also a recruiter who gets candidate FOMO. If you talk to my team, talk to anybody who's known me as a recruiter, I might get 300 resumes and I'm like, I need to look at all of them. What if I miss something? What if there's a gem out there that I miss that resume? And I know not all recruiters are like me, and it's hard to get through that many resumes. What I think helps someone stand out in the crowd are a couple of things, right? When you submit your resume, I highly suggest that you also follow the company on LinkedIn, you reach out to the person with the job posting or somebody at the company, right? Make yourself feel real. Make yourself feel more than just a piece of paper. I actually just hired a recruiter for my team. And when I think about that journey, I received almost 400 resumes. And the person that I selected was somebody who submitted his resume, reached out to me on LinkedIn. The message was very personal. It felt like he had looked at my profile. He had done his research on the company. He followed up with a nice email as well. He had really showed me he wanted this job versus just submitting a resume. And so with that, when I think about what makes someone stand out, it's you've got to be more than just a piece of paper right now.
Ashley, I love that because some of the things you say, I just couldn't agree more with. It's so good. So to summarize for the listeners, so just submit the application, follow up outside application channels, typically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. People do that, what the applicant's done, do they?
No, they don't. And I don't blame them. When you're on the job search, it's easy to get jaded. And it's easy to get frustrated. And there's a lot of competition out there. I know it's easier said than done. And I know that it is challenging to have to go that extra mile. But I do think, especially for a job that you feel like, oh, that's my job, or I'm the perfect person for that, it's worth going the extra mile. It really is.
Yeah, it is. I think as well, like just pick out the jobs where you feel like that or as close to that as possible. So rather than applying for 100, if you apply for 20 or 10, take the approach you've described. I always think that's going to be better for the recruiter on the other side and better for the person applying as well.
Yeah.
Actually, it's really interesting to see. So 400, because I don't think people listening really ever think like this, but I want to try and hit home for cybersecurity professionals, isn't it? So 400 people applied for a job. How many recs job roles for people outside of recruitment listening? How many job roles live does each of your recruiters have roughly at the minute?
I'd say my team typically works a rec load of 15 to 20 positions each. And that's on during our slow time. On the busy times, it can get up to 25. And cybersecurity positions are the ones that we get the most resumes for, probably even more than this recruiting position. My recruiter who specializes in cyber, she always says like she's looking at resumes until from the minute she wakes up till the minute she goes to sleep, practically for the same reason, the candidate FOMO situation. We don't want to miss anybody, but we do. It's a lot. It's a lot of applies.
Yeah, but if she's got 20 recs open and there's 500 people applying, that's 10,000 resumes. So yeah. People are listening and they wonder why we always, and I do it on post, I harp on about personalization and following up with a video message or a voice note or a personalized DM. And it's why? Because that's a lot of work, isn't it?
It is. Yep, yeah, it is.
Yeah. So, for everyone listening, just really, really go for the personalization. And nice to hear a real life example of someone succeeding with that as well. It's pretty cool. Have they started yet? Have you recruited?
They did.
Yet?
Yeah, he started yesterday.
Cool. Listen, go him. I hope he's good. Actually, on the resume formatting, everyone has a different opinion on this and stuff like that. It would be nice to hear from you as someone that's heading up a team of recruiters that's at your level. What do you guys and girls on your team, what's your ideal resume in terms of formatted and how it's displayed and things like that?
Yeah, formatting for me, that's less important. Obviously, you want it to look clear and concise. I'm one where if I thought about putting my resume together today and I've got almost 2 decades of experience, easily I could have a resume that's 3-4 pages long, right? I do still firmly believe in a resume that is not longer than 2 pages because you're going to lose the reader. Statistics are that a hiring manager spends about 10 seconds on a resume. And that's probably generous, honestly, right? Mm-hmm. Where my eye goes to first is something I like to call MSA, which is made, saved, achieved. I want to see, did the person in the role make something? Did they make processes, procedures? Did they create? Did they implement, right? Something maybe that they did that was outside of the normal, I typed away for 8 hours. Did they save the company any money, right? That's a big one. If you were able to increase efficiencies, reduce some time to do something, you're saving the company money. And you could easily put that on your resume to make you stand out. And then, of course, achievements. Did you just totally kill your KPIs and you were knocking it out of the park? Did you win awards? Were there accolades? These are the things that are going to make you stand out as a candidate versus, I don't know, whatever people put on their resume of the little minute tasks that you do every day. It's yes, you do those things, but what made you stand out as an employee? So I tend to look for MSA.
Cool. I like that. MSA, made, saved, achieved. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, cool. It's nice to hear you break it down. So clear and concise. You, for example, could easily have a 4-page resume. That's too much. Keep it to 2 pages. I think 10 seconds is very generous, by the way. I know, you know, I mean, your cybersecurity, we could look at them just bang back because you get so used to looking at the same role or the same skill set. So yeah, 10 seconds max. And MSA, so made, saved, achieved. And to break it down again for the listeners, what you're really looking for with MSA is you're looking for just real life, not fluff, not just actual real life quantifiable examples where, from a commercial standpoint, whether it's in increasing efficiency, saving money, just what did you actually bring to the table in that role? And the more you can get that across when you're describing each role, the better. Yeah, yeah, cool. Obviously, we all go into detail and so it's worth spending the time.
It becomes a much deeper dive for sure. Yeah. But when you put it in context with 300-400 other resumes and we're getting through them quickly, those are the things that are going to make me stop and actually read through the entire resume versus skimming through it because it looks like every other one or there's things on there.
Please just keep it. It really helps you market. You just never know. I think for people out there listening, like, please use your LinkedIn profile as like this phenomenal it can be, because I see sometimes that it's being used and we end up playing the numbers game just to pause because we know we're going to need them at some point, or we need them there and then.
What's interesting when I think about the LinkedIn profile versus the resume, with a resume you feel like you got to put everything on there, but your LinkedIn is like your 30-second elevator pitch. It's your marketing piece about you. It's got your picture, it's got your network, it's got the pages that you follow, things like that. So I really think that your LinkedIn, absolutely, it should be updated. Even if you're not looking for a job, it's still who you are as a professional and how you present to the world with your expertise.
Yeah, definitely. I just think you just never know what doors it's gonna.
I wish I could take credit for it.
Cool. So we'll bounce off the resume. We'll move on to interviews. Be nice to hear common questions that you've seen come up, Ashley. It'd be nice to hear do's or don'ts, things that you like in interviews. Obviously, you're liaising with like really technical hiring managers as well. It'd be nice to hear what they like and they don't like. So yeah, any kind of thoughts or just overall hints and tips when it gets to the interview stage?
Yeah, that's great. There's a couple things that I think of when I think of the interview stage. The first one being that we're doing a lot more virtual these days. And my recommendation for anyone doing a phone screen is to put a mirror up in front of you and watch your face, right? How you sound on the other end is a direct reflection of how you're feeling. So if you're smiling and there's excitement, right? That mirror is going to show you, are you too nervous? Are you frowning? Are you irritated? Is your brow furrowed? All of those things. And so I think for a phone screen, I always recommend to my candidates to put a mirror there so you can see what you look like and catch yourself. Okay. The other thing too, even with video interviews, especially, is I think we have a tendency to ramble, right? It's harder to read body language in a virtual interview than it is an in-person interview. And so my general rule of thumb is if you're talking more than a paragraph, you're talking too much. If a hiring manager asks you a question, think about it in like that 4-sentence format. And you can ask at the end, do you need me to elaborate further? But it's better to be concise and a little bit shorter than to like ramble on and on. And again, in a virtual interview, you're not going to be able to tell that they're done, like they've got their answer or they're already moving on in their brain. And so those are the two things that I think about the most when it comes to interviews. And then I think with regard to questions, I think about this a lot. The weakness question is the one that I feel like everybody always asks me about. And my current CFO, he's really good at this. He's like a dog with a bone when it comes to that weakness question. He is not going to let you say, oh, I work too hard. Yeah. That's the weakness. Yeah. That's the thing everybody says. I'm such a hard worker. I don't know when to turn it off.
I'm a perfectionist.
And he always says to me, he's okay, no, really, what's your weakness? And he'll keep going with it in an interview. And so I have to prep people on that whenever they meet with him. But I think about the best way to answer that question is to give a real life example. Think about a time that you got constructive feedback. And it could be something as silly as, I don't know, I didn't activate a formula in Excel. And then I sent the thing off and then my boss had to come back to me and say, hey, like this wasn't done properly. Or you had a spelling mistake in an email to a client and I was so embarrassed. Now I double check everything, right? Give a very specific example of a time that you got constructive feedback and then follow it up with, and this is what I did to move forward from that or to change that. Because then it makes it real. And you're not just giving the sort of one-liner of, I'm just too good. I'm too great. I have no weaknesses.
Yeah, I'm a perfectionist. It's good that because that is not actually been interviewed for ages. But if someone asked me that, I would be like, oh, God, shit, what am I going to say here? So it is nice to hear that. And it's interesting that your CFO just pushes because I can imagine if you're not prepared for that or you haven't got the advice which you've just given, you could easily go wobbly at that point. You're getting pushed three or four times by someone in the C-suite as well.
And I think that's a popular one at that level. I think that at that point, they know how to cut through and they want to see how do you deal with kind of some difficult pushback, right? That's part of your weakness is if I'm going to be pushy with you or I'm going to keep going with something, how do you react? Are you going to be able to come up with something on the fly? So that's my big advice is that weakness question because it gets everybody.
No, wicked. I'm going to just do a bit of summary here. But before I do this, something you said here, which I absolutely love because it is so relatable to a skill set that is so valuable in security. And it was basically when you're talking about being clear and concise and not rambling and going shorter, because you'll know, Ashley, I find the further up the ladder I go, the more to the point people are. I deal with a lot of fat. I mean, different cultures and different. I find, especially in New York, I like dealing with New Yorkers. I've got a lot of my client base. So I'm not talking badly about them if they're listening, but they're very, very to the point, and they like me to be very to the point. And if I start waffling, I can just see them switching off. They absolutely it's just not for them. So I just think vulnerability needs fixing. The chances of getting it signed massively. So you're displaying a really valuable skill set by getting to the point.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So not only will it help your interview, it will make the clients think or the interviewer think or your future employer think, yeah, this guy or girl could really cut the mustard with us and really make it happen. But yeah, so Ashley, great, by the way. I really like that for more than one reason, like I say, for the job and for the interview. But get to the point, clear and concise. Watch your face so you get better at video calls and things like that. And if in doubt, go shorter. I don't know if you're the same as me. Actually, when I'm nervous, I talk more. So I think you've probably got to think it's even shorter than it is, haven't you?
Yeah. That's why I like that paragraph idea. For some reason in my head, they teach you in school 4 sentences as a paragraph. And so if you're talking in 8, 12, 16 sentences, that's a novel already. Right? You're losing them. So that's why I like that paragraph analogy, because I feel like it drives it home.
Yeah. I can remember my emails in recruitment when I first started. I used to tell them every single little thing about our agency and we've been in business with it. And no one cares, man. It's get to the point.
Yep. Exactly.
I was like, why is no one replying? This is weird. They must all be busy. But yeah, no, cool, Ashley. Thanks for that. You've given us loads on the interview there. In terms of like questions and stuff like that, is there like a set go-to routine or template or just best practice, if you like, for interview questions in interviews?
Yeah. I do think it's important to ask questions at the end of an interview. I could be having a really great interview with someone, and then I say, okay, what questions do you have for me? And they're like, none. And you're like, okay, you're not interested in this job. It's just a feeling that you get. And so I do think it's important to have two or three questions pre-prepared, because they might answer a few things as you're going through the interview. So you don't want to just have one, they might answer it. I think it shows your interest. The types of questions that I typically recommend, and it varies depending on who you're interviewing with, but let's just say a hiring manager, the one that I think is the most important is, what do you expect in the first 30, 60, 90 days to ensure that the person who starts in this role is going to be successful? Or how do you measure success in the first 30, 60, 90, right? That shows the interviewer that you're already thinking 90 days ahead, that you want to start thinking now during the interview stage about what it's going to take for you to be successful at the end of 90 days. It also tells you as the candidate whether those expectations are realistic. Maybe they're saying, hey, in the first 90 days, we're going to expect you to revamp this whole big thing. And you're like, oh, I've never done that before. Maybe I don't want this job. Maybe it's going to be too difficult, or I don't want to take that kind of thing on. So I really like that question. Another question that I like is asking the interviewer, what was your biggest challenge when you first started here? And what I like about that question is you get the interviewer talking. First, it talks to the culture and a little bit about the company and the challenges maybe that are being faced in that department or were being faced, but also it gets the interviewer talking a little bit about themselves. And we all like to talk about ourselves, right? It creates a connection. I have shared something with you now that was a challenge and how I overcame it, and I'm proud of myself. And now we have a little bit of a connection with each other. So those are the two that I like the most.
Yeah, no, thanks, Ashley. That's that's really good. And also as well, I think, yeah, if you get to the end of someone and no one's got any questions, yeah, I'll be thinking, if you've got no questions, have you actually listened to what I'm saying? Like, say, are you actually even bothered? Do you want this job? Like you say, you've got to have questions. Questions are a good thing. You can demonstrate you've listened. You can establish additional rapport. You can spark up kind of offshoots of different conversations. So it's definitely going to help Paul building and the connection side of things. But yeah, the 30, 60, 90 days, I've heard that asked us, what does success look like? We had another cybersecurity recruiter on, actually very experienced, and he said, what does success look like in this role? So not too dissimilar. What does a 30, 60 days, what does success look like after 90 days, or 30, 60, 90 days? And then, yeah, getting them talking about themselves. Yeah, especially if you're talking to a recruiter, they're going to love that one. Like,
what do you like about working here? Yeah, oh, let me tell you.
Yeah, you'll be sat on the call, like, oh God, I wish I never asked.
Exactly. Yeah, but you're right. It establishes this rapport. It creates a connection. You become more than just another interviewer, because you got me talking. You got me excited about something. I really like that one.
Yeah, I do. I think as well, it's like I always talk about it, but like if you can spend time before and after work as a technical person, like really refining, if you're in compliance, the different frameworks, and just really getting your head around them, I think that's just a time thing. And then you match that with like exceptional communication skills, I just think you become dangerous in a good way in any market. It's like technical plus communication equals progression, success, safety, job security. Like, companies are always going to want people that are technical and great communicators, because that's sometimes pretty hard to find. So for everyone listening that's, oh, what are they talking about? The reason we're talking about it so much is because it really will significantly increase your chances of progressing and running your career at the optimal level.
I absolutely agree.
So yeah, cool. Interviews, Ashley, I'm sure 20 years was it in recruitment? I'm sure you've done a few. Plenty of good, plenty of bad. So it'll be nice to hear the best interview, what that particular guy or girl did that was so cool that really grabbed your attention. So yeah, best interview and why?
This is a tough question. It really is. When I think about the best interviews, it's how the person leaves me feeling afterwards. Okay. Even now working in a remote space, when I have a really good interview, I'm like getting up from my desk and going to my husband and being like, I found him. I found the one. This is it. This is the one. Like, I'm going to fill this position. And it's hard to put my finger on exactly what it was, but probably 50% what their qualifications are. Do they match brass tacks? Do they match the job and have all the bells and whistles and check all the boxes that the manager said they wanted? So that's part of it. I think the second part of it, again, is that like building rapport. Did we connect on the phone? Was there some sort of, did I smile during the call? As a recruiter, let's be real, we probably say the same thing over and over in every interview because A, for a non-bias, we have to ask the same questions, and B, to get to the meat and potatoes of whether or not the person's going to be a fit. So we're repeating ourselves over and over for these interviews all day long. And what does somebody do to stand out during an interview? I keep going back to that. What are they doing to stand out on a piece of paper to get me to look at the resume? What are they doing during the interview to stand out? And it could be something as simple as the question that they ask at the end is relatable, or the example that they gave showed some humility or vulnerability, something that makes them feel like a person on the other end. I feel like this isn't a good answer for our listeners because I don't have this like, zing, this is what you have to do. Yeah. But ultimately, it all comes down to just being personable and building a connection.
Yeah, I think when you said, how do you come off, you click end call on that Zoom or that Google Meets, and it's like, how do you feel after? I think if you can keep that in mind, how am I making the other person going to feel? Because sounds basic, but listen, not everyone does think like that. And I know from some of the interviews I've had, clearly not everyone thinks like that. On your point as well, where you run through to your husband and be like, I found it. Like, I know that feeling. It's like, I've had it on some recent searches and I'm like, God, does this person actually, you know, are we actually, even, you know, I'm like, are we actually even got, and then you just have that. And that's all it takes. It's just that one call and you're like, oh, yes. You can be shattered. You can be so tired as well. And then bang, you're wide awake.
Exactly. Yeah, it's energizing. And this is where that candidate FOMO comes into play. It's like, I want to talk to everybody. I want to give everybody the chance to be that candidate, right? And so it's like, what are you doing to stand out?
Yeah, no, definitely. Now, cool. Listen, I think it is a good answer because it is really, like I say, really, if everyone could answer that in one sentence, you could just put it up and sell it and probably sell it for a lot of money. It's a difficult one. But yeah, ultimately, to summarize for the listeners, I think the word you used was personable and ultimately, how do you feel when you come off the call? So We've talked loads about communication already, Ashley, but I do like talking about it. I think it's so important. I think it's not talked about enough, especially in security and technical roles. So the importance of communication, and have you got any tips for if people are listening and they're agreeing with me and you, but they're going, my communication just isn't that good. Like, I know I've got to enhance it, refine it, improve it. I'm just not quite sure how. Have you got any advice for the listeners in that sense?
Yeah, I think communication often comes from a place of confidence. And when I think about my journey as a recruiter, I could talk about recruiting with my eyes closed because I've got so much experience and so many resources that I've invested in and networks and partnerships. And so when I think about this question for our listeners, I think the communication comes from feeling confident that you know what you're talking about. You could be shy and a reserved and a wallflower kind of person, but if somebody gets you talking about the thing that you're passionate about, you're going to be excited. And I think it's investing in resources, time that you spend mastering your craft, becoming an expert, having that knowledge behind you to give you the confidence to be able to communicate.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's, yeah, I think that confidence does come with time. And you can tell when you talk to someone though, can't you? If they're genuinely like really into it, I think you can tell, can't you? And like having that kind of real fire, it does make people stand out. It matters.
And we're talking about tech jobs here, right? These are cool jobs. They're exciting jobs, especially when I think about, I often say in another life, I would have been a pen tester. I love that job. I wish I had the qualifications for it. An ethical hacker, that is so cool. So that's what you should focus in on is I'm passionate about this. I'm excited about this. I'm a cyber nerd. That's what we want to hear on the other end.
Yeah. Oh, the hacking side. That's what initially. just naturally, there's just something of that just gripped me at first. Like, I was reading about it for just hours and never ending. So you're always in that kind of like sense of forward momentum going forward. Of course, like there's going to be more than just you that's had that idea in terms of a career in that space. It's going to be difficult, isn't it?
I know. Like I said, I there are days when I'm like, oh, I wish I would have gone to school for that.
Cool. So any content you're consuming at the minute, it doesn't have to be like, I used to always say like books and stuff like that, but podcasts or content, it doesn't have to be recruitment related. It could be like just general self-help or just something that's like improved you as a person or allowed you to be the best version of yourself or enhanced your career. Like any content, books or podcasts that have been really good?
I'm still really big on books. I do have a lot of friends that say, Ashley, get into podcasts. I have a lot of friends that even say, do the audiobook. It's easier. Again, I'm showing my age here with saying I'm like still a tactile learner and I have to have the book in front of me. Yeah. So when I think about the books that I read early in my career, especially when I was just getting into leadership. So this could be good for your the managers and those folks that are leading, that are listening. I read a lot of Cy Wakeman, No Ego was a good book that I felt like helped me challenge myself as a leader. I've read How to Say Anything to Anyone, which I really feel like helped me identify how I would communicate with different levels throughout the organization. I just finished Atomic Habits, which I still don't know how I feel about it, but I'm hoping it's going to help me. Okay. What else? Those are the big ones I can think of.
Yeah, so Cy Whitman, No Ego, How to Say Anything to Anyone, Atomic Habits. You're not sure about that one, did you say?
I'm not. You know why? Because it took me a long time to get through it. Okay. I was bored, but everybody told me it was so good and that it would help me like redefine some bad habits and things. And it just took me way too long to get through it. Maybe because I wasn't ready to change. I'm not sure.
And listen, do you ever find as well, I don't do this so much anymore, but I used to like journal a lot and write stuff down and remove thoughts from, if I'd read a book, I'd like write a lot of notes on it. And I find it deep my mind, essentially, like it removed the stuff from my head and put it on the page. Do you ever try that when you're reading? Is that something you've ever done?
You know, that's a good point. I don't know. Maybe at times I have found myself like maybe underlining something that I want to remember, or even putting like a little sticky note to be like, come back to this, read this again when you're in a moment. Mm-hmm. Again, I do feel like as a tactile learner, I do have to write things down. Okay. Oftentimes I work with people that they'll be typing, taking notes, and I'm like, how do you listen and type? And for me, I have to write it down in order to retain it. So it's just the way my brain works.
I do. Look, I've got these everywhere. I've got bits of paper everywhere.
Same.
You have to. I think there's something about putting the pen to the paper. And I write a day plan. Even if my day plan's similar because some stuff didn't get actioned, I still just like completely write it out again. And I did read that there's something, again, in your mind where you actually, it really meant to declutter your mind, essentially. So I think we're onto something. We're not old school. We've got it right. Don't worry. We've got it right.
Okay,
and the hardback books as well. Like I've got a couple of books where I've like, I mentioned this on another pod, but I've got some books where I've highlighted certain pages and I can basically reread the book in about half an hour, 20 minutes and get loads from it. I've just highlighted the main kind of really value adding bits that I found the first time I read it. So
exactly. Yeah.
Definitely helps.
The other thing I'll say is I'm a learner. And so I do think that I'm often reading articles on IT, recruitment, job market, things like that. And so as a note to our listeners, it's not just what you read in a book too. A lot of it is just current observation and current knowledge, keeping yourself abreast of like the current trends in your field. And it also gives you something really good to talk about when you're with people.
That's a massive point. Got some friends that work in a brokerage in London and they have to read, like they literally get told they have to read certain financial articles every day. Because when you go onto a client call then, or if we're talking about recruitment, candidate call, client call, building scenario as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Cool. Actually, the junior end of I think a lot of end of the markets are tougher than me, but the junior end of the market, like that's always been really fiercely competitive and tough. At the minute, I think even more so. Like I used to reply to all my DMs that I got on LinkedIn, and honestly, I just don't anymore. So on every pod, I always try and ask for tips for juniors. Now and again, I just jump on, I've not done it for ages, but I used to jump on a LinkedIn live and it used to be like, juniors, ask me anything. And I used to just stay on the live until they all asked me as many questions as they wanted. I'll do another one soon, but they can get pretty intense. But this is a really long-winded way of saying, any tips out there for juniors trying to break in, any advice you could give there on that front?
Yeah. When I think about what I did early on in my career, or what successful people do early on in their career, it's find a mentor. Find someone who can teach you something about business or the craft that you're learning or the where you want to be, right? So many great people that I know will say, oh, I've got a mentor, and they keep up that relationship. And so I even think about it from a recruiting perspective. There are people that I schedule one-on-one meetings with once a month. And they're just other recruiting professionals working for other companies. And we dialogue about, what are we doing? What are you trying? What am I trying? What advice can we give each other? Oh gosh, this was the worst interview I had, and here's why, right? All the things. And so if you can buddy up with someone who you know is going to be able to jive with you in that way, you're going to bounce ideas off each other. In some cases, for junior level folks, that's going to be somebody that you work with, right? And even if you're working in a virtual world, it could be as simple as this person that you respect in the office place. Hey, can we like set up a monthly lunchtime together, and it's virtual and we're talking and I'm learning something from you? People like to talk about themselves. People like to share knowledge, and they like to be liked. And so if you're going at it from a place of, I really respect you, I respect your style, your thoughts, your background, they're going to want to share those things with you and help bring you up with them. So that would be my advice to those junior level folks out there in the IT and cyberspace, is find yourself a mentor or like a group that you can learn from.
Yeah, no, definitely. Actually, I find as well, you know, like sometimes at the really senior end of the market, for people that have done well, some of them genuinely they're at the phase where they actually really really do want to give back. Mm-hmm. I had a chap called Tab Pearson. He's had his own security company for years, and he's now gone into like motivational speaking and stuff like that. And he said just hardly anyone reaches out. And I think it's because he's got quite a presence online. So people are like, oh God, best not reach out to him. And he's like, when I approached him for the pod, he was like, God, yeah, most people just won't come ask me anymore. He even said he had one chap that asked him and then went off the board. So he's actually looking for people to mentor. His name's Tab. And I think at that senior end, a lot of people would look and go, perhaps I won't approach him or her because it's a bit intimidating. But
yeah,
maybe you surprise yourself. And I'm not saying that every single one you approach, it'll just be, yes, I'll do it. But if you approach 30, 40, 50 people over a 2 or 3 month period, chances are you probably get yourself a mentor. You know what I mean? It's, you know.
Yeah. And yeah. And if you get a no, ask, do you know anybody who would be interested, right? That's the other thing, is people like to connect you with other people too. So maybe it's a no for that very senior high level person, but maybe they know somebody that likes to do those things or could recommend you to someone. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, cool. All right, Ashley, on the interviews, we've talked a lot about what we should do and stuff like that. Is there anything that we should avoid, or any kind of like mistakes you've seen? I'm thinking like in this market, big volume of applicants, for people that get through that first round, or they get through that screening, or their resume gets picked out, they want to nail it. So anything they should keep in mind not to do, any red flags that you'd look out for?
That's an interesting question. The adverse of anything I already recommended.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I think there's also a balance between being confident and being cocky. Right. And so let's keep an eye on that, because we also don't want to feel like we're hiring that person who's going to have to be the smartest person in the room. Right. So there's a balance of having humility and vulnerability and not being too confident. I think the other thing that I think about in interviews is, we usually as recruiters, we know in the first, I don't know, 10 minutes, maybe less, whether this call is going to go somewhere. And so I think, again, it goes back to excitement and interest. So if you act uninterested, you act like you don't want to be here. I can't tell you how many interviews I've been on that I've hung up the phone and been like, why'd that person schedule a call with me? Something as simple as, when you have a scheduled call, answer the phone. Hi, this is Ashley, right? Instead of, hello, there's a difference in the vibe and the feeling, right? What you're giving off, right? And so it's that level of, I was prepared. I knew you were calling. I'm excited. So I don't know if I'm telling you what not to do so much as, again, reiterating what to do. Yeah, like, it's just, yeah, it's easier to do it.
Vulnerabilities, essentially staying humble. And I've seen it before. I tell you when I've seen it is when a candidate gets off to a good start and they get off to a good start because they're really down to earth, really humble, and you know, they've got that. And then as they go through the process, they kind of change and relax a bit too quickly, and they forget that they are constantly being assessed throughout, yeah, that process by me, by the client, by multiple stakeholders within the client. And I've seen it countless times where an absolute what looks like a rock star at the start of a process doesn't end up getting an offer. And I think sometimes people can just call it cocky too quickly, kind of, you know. I think just keep in mind, I think that just continuous assessment and just keeping your feet on the, I don't know if you've ever seen it, Ashley, towards the end of a process where people just get a bit too relaxed.
Yeah, that's a good point. That does happen a lot. Mm. And part of it is because you've developed some rapport and there's some personalization there, and you feel like the person you're interviewing with might be your friend at this point. Gosh, you're even envisioning them as your future coworker. Right. And then you let your hair down and you say something in an interview, or you do something, or gosh, you wear sweats to an interview. I've had that one happen. Right. You don't dress professionally because you think it's a casual environment. And then that's the thing that gets you canceled for the next round.
Yeah. No, I think it's so true. And I think in this market, it's the thought of someone getting through that and then just coming on a bit. Let's think, oh, God, they could be on the market again for another 3, 6, 12 months, and you just think, God, just some of this stuff, it just got to be absolutely, I think it's just got to be absolutely nailed. But all right, actually, cool. I think the recruiters on the team, are they all like you in the sense that they like people to hit them up on LinkedIn and step outside the application channel, you know, like the normal channels? Is that something all the team like? Do they?
I think so. Yeah. The other thing I'll say too, and I think about my husband and the way he talks about his company, they offer a pretty good referral bonus. And so for him, if somebody reaches out to him on LinkedIn, he's, yeah, tell me what position you're interested in. I'll refer you and then we'll go to lunch. So I genuinely think that as long as you have about 60% of the qualifications for the job that you're going for, it is worth reaching out to someone on LinkedIn and saying, hey, I saw this job. I really want to work for this company. I'd love to have a chat, or I'd love to see if you have any advice for me. Make it low pressure, right? So that they're not feeling like they've got to jump on a call with you necessarily. But for the most part, we're all connectors and we want to connect people. And so I think about it from my perspective as a recruiter, I definitely want to see you go the extra mile, and I want you to stand out from all the other resumes I'm getting. And then I think about it from a colleague perspective, some of these companies have really good referral bonuses and things like that. And so you might be able to get your foot in the door that way.
Cool. And what, reach out to just general members of the team, or what you perceive to potentially be the technical hiring manager, maybe, as well as recruiters?
Yeah. Yep, yeah, exactly.
Speaking to different people in the community, people, as recruiters, we don't always think what we have to say is maybe as interesting as it actually is. And we get a huge visibility on the market and what's going on. And I think at the minute, people are just more interested than ever. So, it's been good. Have we about done it, do you think? Have I forgot to ask you anything?
No, I think this is it. You don't have any questions for me at the end of this? No, just kidding. No, this has really been great. I've enjoyed it. As you can tell, people are my passion, and recruiting is such a big passion for me. And so it's been great to be able to have this conversation and get to know your side of things as well. And I just really appreciated it.
Yeah, no, good. And that passion that you've got, I think, with AI and automation coming in, I think that passion is going to be amplified even more, because I think we're going to be able to automate a lot of the back office stuff. And I think it's going to be this, what we're doing now, is the only thing where, you know, there becomes a point where a human wants to talk to a human, and we crave that human interaction. And I think that if you can master that skill set, and if you're passionate about it, it really helps. I think it's going to become more and more valuable. So yeah, it's good. Yeah, cool. It's been really nice to see you, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thanks. All right. Take care.